Hey everyone, welcome back to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
How are you, buddy? I'm good. Hi guys. Good to be back here on set. As you see, I'm just doing a little filming behind me in my virtual set back there.
Nice.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had a night last night. You know those nights when you sit there and you're like, okay, I'm going to go to bed at a decent hour. And then you're like in bed and you just sit there and you look at the clock and you're like, Jesus, it's now 11. It's now midnight. Yeah. It's now one. It's now two. This continued. I don't think I fell asleep, honestly, Robbie, until 6 a.m., 5:30 or 6. Yeah, it was rough. Part of it was my shoulder. I don't know if you ever sleep wrong. And then you get a crick in your neck or your shoulder. That's what I was dealing with. It was a nightmare, literally. So
I sleep funny. I don't know how I sleep, but sometimes I'll twist and my hips, like literally my hip sockets are like, I'll wake up and I'll be like, ow. Cause I think I twist like a pretzel sometimes when I sleep.
Oh,
I don't know.
Interesting. So you feel it in your hips. Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
I used to feel it in my shoulders some.
Yeah.
But my shoulders are good these days, but it's just, sometimes I think I twist around and like my legs are going one way and my shoulders are going the other. And then my hips hurt in the morning. Cause it's like when if you fall asleep and you get like your muscles, something falls asleep, like your arm falls asleep. Cause you got in a weird position. That's kind of how it feels sometimes.
So do you end up doing
sleeping anything? Is hard sleeping
when you wake up, you stretch it out or you just kind of grin and bear it.
Yeah. Sometimes.
All right. That's good.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I just finished Resident Alien yesterday. We finished the season finally, this show that has had so many obstacles.
Oh, God.
I can't even start to list all of them. And we finally finished yesterday up on a glacier. Yes. Helicopter rides up to the glacier filming. I went up 2 days in a row and finally finished that. So I'm going to be sleeping much better for a little while. I was not sleeping well. A lot of anxiety. We came back from the COVID break and shot elements and scenes from 9 of the 10 episodes. And I was directing all of that material because we didn't want to bring back directors for, quarantining and everything. So it's the longest stretch I've ever directed.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me you were finishing 9 or 10 episodes, and some of those episodes were directed originally by other directors, correct?
Yes.
So then did you try to imitate the feel of each director as best you
I talked to those directors ahead of time and asked them exactly how they saw the scene, because I want to give them what they wanted.
Of course.
That's their episode.
Yeah.
So part of my job when I have to do that is to find out what's your shot list, what's your plan.
Okay.
I can't always guarantee, because things happen when we get there.
Right.
That we can get every shot, but I try to do that. So yeah, that's what I did. Tried to fit it, shoot it the way they wanted. Sometimes they didn't really have a precise plan, so I could figure that out with the actors on the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a 10 episode season. I had to shoot the entire finale. We still had to shoot plus scenes from 8 other episodes. Some small scenes, some very big scenes. I shot 25 work days in a row, which I've never done as a director. Usually on Star Trek, we shot those episodes in 7 days.
Yeah.
7 shooting days. I had 25 days that I just finished yesterday. So I'm ready for a little break.
You can hibernate now. It's time for you to hibernate.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I am ready.
All righty. So this week's episode, it's Maneuvers. We're on to Maneuvers. So let's go and rewatch this episode and come back and give our recap. And for our Patrons, stay tuned for What Do We Remember? Welcome back, guys. We've just finished rewatching Maneuvers.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. I gotta say, I did remember some of this. Like those, you know, my memories when I was like, I got some images. Maybe it was the holodeck. Maybe it was actually what I was, the memories I was having in our What Do We Remember, we were talking about earlier, was from the Chakotay interrogation portion. I remember filming that. I must have been shadowing David Livingston.
Yeah.
I remember dealing with the stunt of that and a few things about that scene, that interrogation scene definitely came back to mind. A lot of the stuff that was on the Kazon ship, I remember being there to shadow and watch. So that was the memories I was having. As well as I think I somewhere remembered the pregnancy, but I couldn't articulate. I mean, I knew that happened in the series, but I felt like that was around this episode. So yeah, I have vague memories of this episode. I had fun. Right. I actually really liked this episode. I thought it was great.
Well, thank God that you had motivations to direct and that you shadow, because that's helping your memory.
That's the only things I remember. I know.
All right, so let's do our synopsis. You want me to take a shot at mine right now, or do you want to go?
I've got a limerick.
Okay.
I've got a limerick for my synopsis.
What's your limerick?
How all-encompassing. It was a complicated episode, so it's hard.
Yeah.
But my limerick, let me get to it here. My limerick was, here we go, for Maneuvers. Seska can't forget about Chakotay. And she uses Maj Kulla the same way. Janeway took a chance, and by the seat of their pants, they save the crew and their technology to fight another day.
Whoa, that was actually good. When you told me earlier that it wasn't so good, I was expecting it to be very subpar, but that was actually above par. So
really?
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Okay.
My haiku synopsis would be, Seska steals module. Chakotay goes after her. Hostage trade works best.
It does. Hostage trade usually works best. I've got a whole big, huge issue, though, with the ending, but we'll get there.
We'll get there.
Yeah. I'm like a huge hole. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Written by Ken Biller, directed by David Livingston. Obviously, you recall shadowing David for this particular episode. You remember that interrogation scene. What really stood out to me in terms of something that I don't recall at all was the use of that Kazon shuttle as a kamikaze shuttle, where they just punctured our hull with it.
Yeah.
You know, and they modified their hull to be more of to puncture, basically, to get into this. And I don't remember filming that at all. And that's such a big setup for this episode. But it's for me, that was kind of like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I didn't remember the kamikaze thing either. Okay. I still struggle with the Kazon generally.
Yep.
Whenever they say like, oh, they need our technology because we can make water and we can make food. And I'm like, dude, you just created a shuttle that can puncture Starfleet hulls. You've got laser beams from your ships that shoot out and almost destroy us. You've got so much technology, but yet you don't know how to make water or food.
Well, to play devil's advocate, they do have Seska kind of, you know, helping out and kind of guiding them with the technology. But it's true. Even when in those scenes with Seska on the Kazon bridge, when she's talking to everybody and she's like, make sure we reduce the emission, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm thinking, these guys don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
They don't even know how to make water. It's like, I don't believe this. Like they literally look like, you know, Tibetan goat herders with their uniforms.
Yeah.
And then they're so advanced that they're going to know all these like technobabble terms. So it is a little, you have to kind of, you know, you kind of just have to trust that this is the way it is and just go with it, because otherwise you're going to get a little annoyed.
I'll go with it. Let me go back though. I want to go back for a second. The very first scene, Balana and Chick, Yeah. Well, even the turbo lift, the very first scene, B'Elanna and Chakotay step into a turbo lift.
Yeah.
And they're talking about hoverball and they've been called to the bridge. I noticed that was shot as a one-er. So if the fans go back and you watch, you'll see the turbo lift doors open. Yep. And then Chakotay and B'Elanna step in. And then you see kind of a shadow of as if the door shuts. You never see the door shut. And they talk for a while. And then the light opens again as if the door opened. And they step out and they're on the bridge. I just want the fans to know that was shot. They started that scene in the turbo lift that's on the bridge. They just stepped in, pretended like the door's shut, pretended like the door's open, and then stepped out as if they had come from somewhere else. But if you watch it again, you'll notice. And I remember when they did that, I thought it was super clever. I'm like, wait a minute, what? But if you don't show that the turbo lift they're stepping into is actually already on the bridge, then it looks like you've actually gone inside a turbo lift, gone up somewhere else, come out on the bridge. You didn't. You just went in the same turbo lift that's right there on the bridge. And it
works. Good eye, man. Yeah. I did not catch that at all. Look at that little bit of Hollywood magic there to cover that up. I want to say that the first time that we were on our bridge, you give a very low yes, ma'am. Typically, I'm used to yes, ma'am. But this one, you're like, yes, ma'am. You went really low in the
interesting
register.
I did notice in this episode more than ever the kind of distinctive vocal qualities of all of us. I mean, clearly, I know that I have a sort of yes, ma'am, sort of a, that was what I did for Tom Paris.
You're breathy.
Very breathy. Mm-hmm. I noticed that Janeway either whispers a lot or she's barking very sharp like you do, you know, like you do a good imitation. But I definitely noticed B'Elanna has this sort of warbly, well, Captain, it's kind of a warbly sound. I don't know. I do horrible impersonations, but I noticed every time Roxanne had a scene, there was sort of a dramatic warble to her voice.
And I was interesting.
I never had noticed it before, but I'm like, totally, that's the distinctive Roxanne Dawson quality. It's this sort of dramatic warble thing. Look at it when you watch
another episode. I will, but I'm going to say our voices, our characters and our voices are pretty much instruments in a symphony orchestra.
Yeah.
We all have a different, you know, cadence and a different sort of warble, you know, so that's true. I'm going to listen for the warble. Did you notice with her hair?
Yeah, her hair changed in the middle of the episode. Typically it's like she went to the salon.
Yes.
Like B'Elanna was like, I'm upset about Chakotay's gone. I've got to go to the salon. It was like, whoop.
So the beginning, it's all poofy and like she just got out of the salon. It's like a bouffant hairdo. Yeah. And then starting in that scene where she's in the briefing room, it's now flattened down. It's not as poofy anymore. So then that's towards the second half of the episode. So first half of the episode, salon, second half, not so much. And I thought when you brought up that turbo lift scene with Chakotay and B'Elanna, I did not know. I thought you were going to get onto one of your little jealous things, saying like, look what's going on. But no, you told us about the camera move. So I'm very impressed that you haven't let it get to you.
I was trying to not go there, Garrett, but thanks for bringing that up.
You know,
thanks a lot for bringing that up. I noticed that they were in the turbo lift. I noticed that B'Elanna goes and begs to save her dear friend Chakotay. Very emotionally with extra warble in her voice. I noticed it all. Okay, let's just say when they were talking about Seska, Chakotay, before he takes off on the shuttle, and he's talking with B'Elanna about Seska, and she's like, oh, she's getting to you. I saw her little jealousy of Seska. I saw her getting flirty. I saw him with his little smile.
Oh,
I saw it. I did not miss a moment.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let it get to me. Not going to let it get to me one.
I loved when she goes, that little conversation between B'Elanna and, was it? Yeah, with Chakotay. And she says, She's like, you have a lousy taste in women or something like that. And I'm just waiting for, and the subtext was like, you should have picked me.
Yeah, totally was.
And yeah. I knew jealous when watching that scene.
Jealous is not the right word.
Okay. Can go with something else.
Confused. I was baffled. Confused. Why is she behaving that way with Chakotay, who clearly can't compete? But anyway.
Martha Hackett, when she comes onto the View screen and we see her for the first time,
yes.
Once again, such a delicious performance by Martha Hackett as Seska.
So good.
Again, just relishes that role, and she does such a great job with it. And once again, we see Anthony DeLongis, my college theater department movement and stage combat teacher, as Maj Kulla. And, you know, I just wanted to say that typically when you go to any university's theater department, it's filled with teaching personnel that 9 times out of 10 gave it a shot in Hollywood, but kind of like, nothing really happened. So they went to teach, you know? So if you can't make it as a, you know, if acting can't be your way of making a living, well, then you can teach acting typically.
Right.
But with a lot of the teachers, especially with Anthony DeLongis, being a professor at the UCLA theater department, that afforded him the chance to go on auditions because he was already in LA, you know?
Yep.
So that, you know, is really, I think, it's more rare to see that, right? When you have someone teaching and also actively acting in roles.
Yep.
So just want to bring that up.
Yeah, Anthony is great. I, as we talked about before, I had worked with him on Masters of the Universe. He played Blade.
That's right.
In the movie. And so I knew Anthony as well. Yeah.
A very young Anthony at that point, right?
Yes.
I mean,
he was.
Yeah, definitely.
I was a much younger Robert Duncan McNeil.
Were a tadpole
at that point. I was a tadpole.
You were
I was a baby.
Okay. Your skin was so smooth then.
Yes, it was. And I was so innocent and naive.
With your long locks, your early 90s. What year did you film that? Masters?
Like 86, I think.
Okay. That was your 80s hair then, right? Your
80s totally hair. 80s hair. Yeah. On the bridge, when we hear that there's a beacon sending a Federation signal, and there's some shots of Tom Paris turning back and talking to them. I think Janeway was up at Tuvok Station in that very first scene. I noticed that I wanted to share, I guess, that shot of Paris down front with a view screen. Those would always get shot. I did a lot of shots, sometimes weeks after the rest of the scene was shot, because they would never turn around and shoot the view screen, almost never, while we were filming an episode, because that required VisFX, and they put that on their second unit days. So if there was a view screen up front, we'd often, almost always, put that on a second unit list. So I would go to these second unit days because I was down front, and I would sit there and do multiple episodes sometimes of like, okay, was this? What is this scene again? Oh, this is when we see the beacon and we see Seska. Okay. And I'd be there by myself with someone reading off camera and no one else was around. And it was, so I feel like that shot was one of those because it felt like it had nothing to, like I was not actually talking to Janeway or anybody. It was probably, you know, long after the fact, and I had, you know, somebody up there, like an AD or somebody reading the lines of everybody else. But that would often happen. Those shot, anytime you see the view screen and Paris, or the view screen and the captain down there and she turns around, that was usually done separately from the scene. So,
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because, like, you did multiple episodes there, and now as a director, you had to do multiple episodes of Resident Alien as well. Yeah. So you kind of had, you're trained as an actor dealing with multiple episodes in second unit. And second unit, I didn't know that you were doing that much in second unit. I would say in the entire 7 years that I worked on Voyager, I think I probably showed up for second unit maybe twice.
Wow.
And I really, it's, and for those of you who are listening, Second unit is really just a very, very scaled down version of first unit. Like you really feel the energy when you're with first unit, you feel everybody's energy. Everyone's there. But then second unit is sort of like you can hear crickets in the background. It's like, it's no like you're in the country. There's no rush. It's a
couple of people, relaxed. It's small crew, and they're a little confused often. They're like, wait, so what exactly is this? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did it a lot because of where my seat was.
Right.
Now, all those shots of the view screen that I was tied into.
Okay. Did they actually film your hands touching the console? Because most of the time it wasn't my hands. It was second unit.
Sometimes. They'd have a double hand double often for hands. But if it was over my shoulder to the view screen and someone talking to the captain behind me, I would have to sit there so that when I turned around, they had my face. Sometimes they'd put a photo double even for the, you know, the wide shots down there. But often I was there. I was there. I wouldn't say every second unit, but I would say at least once a month I was in for a second unit, and I do multiple episodes and have no idea what the scenes were because they had been done weeks before.
And wasn't the person in charge of second unit usually VisFX?
Yeah, it was usually VisFX.
Dan Curry directing usually. Did the director of photography sometimes direct second unit or no? Like,
I don't think so. Doug Knapp? Okay. No.
Doug Knapp.
I don't think so. I think it was usually VisFX coming in or.
Why did Dan Curry get that job to do that though?
I mean, because it was usually second unit was visual effects. It had something to do with a visual effects. Yeah. Okay. Shots that needed some very specific framing or very specific elements that would take more time. That's why we didn't do it in first unit. It was just slow. It would take more time. So, you know, balancing back then, the green screen had to be, you know, very evenly exposed. It was much more touchy than nowadays. You can put anything up and
literally
computers. Yeah. You can put almost anything up.
Anything
you don't need tracking marks and all the things that you used to need. So,
yeah. Technology has come a long way since we filmed Voyager.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to our plot, the kamikaze ship, that was very cool. I love that they use sort of an old school way combined with like new school sci-fi ideas to sort of break into the ship and then exit through via the transporters. I thought that was a very dynamic and cool, exciting way to break in.
Agreed.
So the Nistrum now have some Starfleet technology. They stole one of our transporter modules and, that's a huge issue for Janeway. She's got to, you know, they are required to do almost anything to prevent Starfleet technology from altering, you know, the balance of power with any kind of alien interactions that they have. So so it's a big deal that this transporter technology got stolen. That it's called the Quantum Resonance Oscillator is what they stole, I think they say.
Look at you with your techno babble.
Yeah, the Quantum Resonance. Of course, everybody knows about the, you know, transporter technology, duh. Duh.
Do you remember that movie, Fish Called Wanda? And yes. Jamie Lee Curtis's character is always getting really turned on whenever Kevin Kline uses these different accents or whatever. Wondering if there's someone out there that gets really turned on by hearing techno babble, like quantum resonance oscillator.
Quantum resonance oscillator. Yeah. There's a bunch of it in this. This episode, I thought the plot, like all the beats were really interesting. There were a lot of turns and twists and turns in the plot. I thought all the sci-fi elements were conceived really cool. I mean, the weakest part of this episode to me is still the Kazon as an alien. I struggle with feeling a lot of jeopardy with them because they just seem like bumbling.
They set it up that way. They, you know, in the beginning, if you start showing people that are amazed by water, the capability to create water, then you're going to make everybody go, I'm not really on board with this group, you know, and they the wardrobe, the everything without those guys is just off.
Yeah.
But we do learn a little bit more about the Kazon. We learn that there are other groups as the Hobai, the Kazon Hobai, the Kazon Mistral, the Kazon Relora. And the Kazon Oglamar. So we have all these new groups that are introduced. Mm-hmm. We don't see them before this. Let's see. The Kazon where Laura Maj gets beamed into space.
Yeah, that was crazy, by the way. That cool act out when, yeah, the Laura Maj is there and they're trying to convince him to, you know, for them to work together. And he's getting a little heated. And Seska's like, you know what? Let's just take a break. Let's calm down. Let's think about this. And, and you think that she's sort of giving up. And then you cut back to our ship, to Voyager, and all of a sudden there's bodies floating in space. You realize she didn't give up. She executed these men. She had an idea. Let's beam them into space and just get rid of them. So the Laura Maj and his companion floating in space.
Dead. I like the reveal, though. I like the reveal because it didn't just show up the close-up on the view screen. We see it from a distance. Like, so we're thinking, is that a shuttle? What is that? Are those rocks? Is that an asteroid? And then... boop, close up, it's two dudes. It's just like,
I wonder how they filmed that. They might have had to put them up on wires with a green screen to get those bodies floating. Like those seems like a quick, easy thing, but that's the kind of thing we'd do in second unit. We'd never shoot that in first unit because it would you'd have to get them wired up and in front of a green screen and moving in the right way. So
They had really calm looks on their faces though. For being dead in space. Like if you were an actor, like, wouldn't you try to like put a little zhuzh on that? Would you be more like, would you do something with your face? Like you just had drank prune juice. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. Thanks. Yeah. I just made a,
the one eye open. Okay.
Now I'm making a really awkward smiley face.
Yeah. I would have done that. Would have been, it would have been funny if like, one of them had a horror face on and the other one just had a really huge smile on his face. That just would have been weird.
The horror face would have been the Maj because he's the leader.
Yeah. And the companion
would have been the companion or the lackey is the guy that would have been like, he's finally dead. It's like, this guy's been abusing me for this entire time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's see. So we go to sick bay and I got to say Neelix is the one that is critical for us solving this dilemma. So we know that there's dead bodies. They've been executed, but Neelix is the one that sees the little wristband and says, wait a minute, that is a Maj. That's a leader. And so they sort of are able, because of what Neelix knows, they're able to put together that there must've been some competition. Seska used the technology to execute these guys. So I love that even though Neelix didn't have a lot to do in this episode, that he was very critical in that moment to help us understand what was going on.
Yeah, not only is he the Kazon expert, he's also a bit of Sherlock Holmes in this episode. So that's nice to be able to see him help us out, for sure. We also learn about a Kazon alcoholic drink that we see Seska drinking.
Yes.
And it's called Enemy's Blood. I think that's the name of the next drink that you do next month for the
Enemy's Blood. Yes.
Yeah. Enemy's Blood. So can you come up with something that'll look like Enemy's Blood?
I will work on that. Remind me of that. Good. I'm going to make a note, but yes, Enemy's Blood. We'll have to come up with a good cocktail.
In that scene when she's drinking, there's that whole back and forth between Chakotay and Seska where she's like, it's like, she loves him not. It's like this, she's coming in, she's trying to seduce him, she pulls back out. She comes back in again, she pulls back out. And it's just, it got a little soap opera-y.
Well, it definitely showed with Seska, either she's got really strong feelings, which I think is true. But the thing about Seska is you never know whether she's playing you or not, particularly when it comes to like seducing or feelings or because she does it with the Kazon, she does it... that scene was very melodramatic and kind of classic, kind of classic femme fatale sort of, you know, the dangerous woman. I want to jump back just before that. There was after Chakotay stole the shuttle,
Yeah.
Which is amazing. They say how he did it by, you know, bypassing something, but it's amazing that he was able to steal the shuttle and get off the ship without anybody knowing. And immediately you see Tuvok and Janeway walk and talk down the hallway. They're heading into engineering. That is one of the fastest walk and talks I've ever seen. The Steadicam must have been flying backwards or if they were rolling. I don't know how they did it. But what it reminded me of was David Livingston. Do you remember when he was directing? He'd do a ton of takes, and often the only note he would give is, let's go faster, go faster, go faster. He wanted like pace. He always, that was his note. Like, let's do it again, but just go a little faster, go a little faster.
Hmm.
And that was a scene for me that I realized, I bet they had done that a bunch of times. And David had said, walk a little faster, go a little faster. The whole scene plays really fast. So just reminded me of a common note David Livingston would give. And it was a smart note. It was a good note.
Yeah. One thing about David's directing, in that scene where Maj Kulla is on his bridge, and he kind of, the way the lighting was, he kind of looked back and the light was just on his one eye. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And that was like, oh my God. I don't know if Livingston planned that, but it was perfect. It was just like, this is awesome. You see the light on the one eye and everything else is in shadow. So
yeah,
I enjoyed that.
Yeah. I did notice in the scene with B'Elanna and Janeway that B'Elanna was really defending Chakotay, you know, and saying, don't, you know, if he survives and if we get him back, just know she was defending him. She was really defending him hard. And to be quite honest, I think Chakotay should, like, Tom Paris was thrown in the brig for, you know, 30 days for not following orders and not doing what he was supposed to do. And
I
knew that Chakotay was not going to get thrown in the brig and he was going to get off. And that was a scene to me that was like, he probably should be thrown in the brig. Like, this is a big deal, you know, risking the way he did. Anyway, so that was just a scene where I was like preemptively going, nah, he should be thrown in the brig. I disagree with you. And it's not about my jealousy with B'Elanna. It's not about that.
I think Janeway threw you. By the way, when did Janeway throw you in the brig for 30 days? When did that happen?
I forget the episode. I think it's called 30 Days, but there's an episode. It's true. That's the name of the episode. I forget what season it was, but it was a good episode. It was a lot of, I think Les Landau directed it. I remember having a really good time. Les was great.
Right.
We'll get there at some point.
When you say it's called 30 Days, now it makes me think of like, it's just you in the brig for 30 days. Tom Paris brushes his teeth.
Yeah.
Tom Paris uses like, the washroom.
It was a lot of like journaling and reflection. And I remember really enjoying the episode. That's for another day.
That is for another day. But don't get mad about her throwing you in the brig, because just remember, we found you as a penal colony person.
Yes.
Remember? Yes. So Janeway's thinking, you know what? He's used to it. That's why.
By the way, when you just said penal colony,
did you think
I wanted to act like a 12-year-old and make a joke?
I know,
but
you
didn't.
You do. You should just be yourself. Come on.
No, I'm not going to make jokes about the word penal colony.
You were going to say penis colony is what you were going to say.
I don't. You know what? I'm not a 12-year-old. I'm grown up.
You're a
12-year-old. I don't have to make penis jokes or butt crack jokes all the time. I can rise above that. So.
Please let your inner 12-year-old come out.
I gotta say, so Chakotay gets on the the Kazon ship, and then he hands Seska his phaser, and I'm just like, what?
Yeah,
like,
what was that?
I don't know. He was like, I'm not gonna fight. That's not gonna be the answer. I'm gonna have to trick my way out of this.
I think Chakotay was actually saying, he was saying to Seska, Seska, take this before Robbie breaks this phaser. Keep it for me.
I just realized I had not plugged in my computer that was getting very low on energy sources. The energy source of my computer was depleting. We must reroute the power variance to the warp core and modulate the anagrams until I get battery implosion. I don't know. I don't do the technobabble good, but now my computer's Okay. Any power again.
So you missed my joke. Well, you were distracted. I was just saying that the reason why he handed the phaser to Seska was he was saying, Seska, take this phaser before Robbie breaks it on set.
Like, yeah, you can. I did miss it. I was trying to get my power cord.
You focused on your power. All right. I'm glad that you saved it because you're the one recording this particular episode. Yes. So
I just saved. I not only did I save Starship Voyager many times, but I just saved the
podcast. You saved the Delta Flyers podcast. Exactly. You're such a hero. Oh, my God.
Okay. We talked about... There's a moment in the interrogation scene, by the way, which I thought was really great, interrogating Chakotay, where there was this low-angle, wide lens that you could see Seska standing above Chakotay, and then Kula leans in, and the two faces, Chakotay and Kula, are in tight with... It's a wide, low-angle lens. And I remember when I was shadowing, that was sort of an eye-opener for me, that kind of lensing in sci-fi. David Levinson used the wide-angle lenses a lot. He was known for it as one of our directors. Most of the actors didn't like it.
But correct.
Boy, I really liked that. I know you didn't. But I liked that shot. And I think David Levinson could use it sometimes very, very well.
I also want to commend Robert Beltran and his acting in that interrogation scene.
Oh, yeah, because he's really good.
Very, very realistic, you know, and the makeup looked really good when he had that big bruise on his eye there. I mean, it all came together well.
It all came together, yeah. And I thought when they drugged him and his sort of hallucination, that when they had his point of view and
played that well too. He
played it great. And that lens that they use. I think that's called the squishy lens. It was a type of lens that David Livingston would use a lot of kind of trick toys, and that lens that sort of makes everything move around weird. It was either
the What did you call it? Squishy
lens. It could have been a squishy lens or probably a squishy lens. It could have been a lens called the mesmerizer that was very popular back in those days, where things would sort of move around in an odd way, but David would use those lenses, and I use those lenses myself later on because of learning about it from David Livingston. So
that is the industry wide terminology.
Yes, the brand was called the squishy lens.
Yes. Oh, the brand was squishy. Okay, can squishy you spell lens. That? It's not like S Q U I S H Y, is it? Squishy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because if you moved it, it had some gel in the lens and you could kind of move the lens and create that sort of weird distortion happening.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. It was cool. A very specific kind of lens to use. That retractable needle gag, those always give me when Seska put that needle in him.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I know it's just a trick needle, and it just always gives me the shivers.
You cringed, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
This is a general comment here.
Yeah.
In almost every episode where we are dueling with other ships, there's always the evasive pattern, and then it's
Delta
it's
Gamma
this,
5.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's in this show it was Omega 2, whatever. So there's the Greek alphabet letter followed by a numeral, right? I mean, does anyone have
a manual of
Yeah. I would like to know, what is Omega 2? Someone's got to vet somebody out there.
Somebody has
compiled this.
Like reverse engineered all of these evasive patterns into a playbook.
Yes. It's
kind of like a football play going, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
so that's what I want. Yeah. That's what I would like anybody out there who's listening, please contact us if you have the playbook.
That would be an interesting thing to actually, if somebody has done a little research, to put that together and actually like go to Paramount and try to publish a book of all the different Star Trek, because it's not just Voyager that's done this. It's
right.
The franchise has done this.
Yeah. We've been doing these terms for this tactical maneuvering forever, since the dawn of time. Right. Yeah. So I'm curious.
Yes. The military engagement playbook of Starfleet. And these are the different moves. That's an interesting concept for like a book.
Yeah.
And I think the Delta Flyers podcast can publish this book. Licensed from Paramount. Let's do it.
We should do this.
Create this.
I love it. And also when the pandemic is over, I would like you and I, when we're hanging out, we're going to use that as code. Like if we're out in public and I didn't want to say something to you, I don't want anyone else to hear, I'll say evasive pattern gamma 4 like that. Okay. And you'll know.
And
like,
I'll know.
We'll just come. Yeah.
Okay, good. I like it. Smart. Very smart. No one will know that we're trying. When you do that, when you say like, hey, Robbie, evasive pattern gamma 4, people will be like, what? That code has flummoxed me. I don't know what he's saying. And it'll be great.
I like the use of flummoxed.
Yeah.
Flummoxed. Like people will just be so confused.
They'll be so flummoxed. Perplexed and yes.
I love it.
We're almost near the end of this. So big space battle. Big yeah. space battle. That's exciting. Yeah. And then I one thing I did notice is I like the way that former Maquis, there was a lot of stuff in this episode about what people had learned about each other over time, like in their past and how that affects their awareness now, you know. Mm-hmm. B'Elanna talking about Chakotay and he's a good guy and I know him from mm-hmm. his past, or Seska saying, Chakotay, I know how you would react here. There's a lot of those themes going on. Mm-hmm. But I did like the way that Starfleet and the Maquis use their experience and their knowledge to work together to solve this. And
Yeah.
And so we can't beam Chakotay because we temporarily beam him through at warp speed, but it doesn't quite work. Seska's able to kind of change the phase variance or something, and now we can't mm-hmm. get him. Mm-hmm. Which was a very clever idea.
You know, a daring rescue plan.
Daring rescue plan. Let's beam him at warp. And then she says, they say, oh, that's not possible. And she goes, I've done it before when I was a Maquis.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, I really love this.
Yeah.
But they do beam over some Kazon, and mm-hmm. Tuvok's got him at gunpoint, and he says, here's the terms. You're going to return Chakotay and the shuttle, and that'll get you your freedom. And
also, how convenient is it that their weapons were also disabled by the transporters?
Yeah, I've never heard the transporters doing that before. But I love it. But here's the biggest thing that I want to get to. This is the whole.
Yeah.
They're like, here's the terms. Give us Chakotay. Give us the shuttle. What two things did they leave? They didn't say, give us the transporter technology. The what did I call them before? I'm going to find it. The quantum resonance oscillator that they stole. They didn't ask for that back. And the biggest thing is, they didn't say, give us Seska as a prisoner for our brig. Because Seska is a danger to, she's betrayed Starfleet, she's got all this. Why didn't they say, give us Seska and the quantum resonance oscillator, too?
Well, they couldn't say that.
I'm speechless. I can't even think of the word of what I am. I'm flummoxed is what I am.
I don't think there was much room for negotiation. I think that literally they were stuck, their backs are up against the wall. It was like, listen, give us back Chakotay in the shuttle and then we'll let you go. That's it. Like, they couldn't really offer anything else.
I don't know. I think they did it because they wanted more episodes with Seska. That's why they did it. But she should have been in the, like, you've got their leaders right there.
Yeah.
Like, you've got, I don't know. To me, that's a huge hole, but anyway. True. They left Seska. They left the resonance oscillator. So I guess we don't care about all that stuff that started this.
Well, the only thing that matters is the very end of the show. The very end of the show, the soap opera moment is then you hear Seska saying, I extracted Chakotay's DNA and now I've impregnated it inside of me. So now I have your baby gestating in my womb. Scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. He was very shocked by that. And I think probably B'Elanna was a little disappointed that, Seska's going to be having Chakotay's baby and not her.
That made you happy, though, I think.
It did. It did. I felt like the deal was sealed. Like, B'Elanna's not going to go there anymore. Like, it's Seska's. Seska has put the nail in the coffin of the B'Elanna Chakotay potential.
She has. Do you, so for my theme, I'm going to say,
I was going to ask you.
I would say trust your gut over what may be your better judgment, which is what Janeway did.
Yeah.
Okay. Because sometimes, you know, her head said, her mind said, go ahead, leave Chakotay. But her gut was,
that's the smart thing.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the themes or one of the lessons here.
I get that.
That your gut really is working on your behalf, you know, except when it comes to jealous issues, obviously that's just not really your gut.
Except for me being jealous of Balana.
Being jealous. Exactly.
By the way, I just want to say, this is kind of a joke. Like for those people out there, I'm not actually, this is just fun to do, but I'm not actually.
Do you need jealous. To make that disclaimer?
I don't know. I feel like I might. Like people might think that, this is just.
Disclaimer, everyone. Yeah. Robbie is truly not jealous of Chakotay.
Because Roxanne was married to Eric Dawson, a good friend of mine. I know that she's not really Balana, but it's just fun. I had forgotten all of this stuff with Chakotay and Balana early on. So it's kind of. So I may continue to do it. We'll see. But it's a fun little runner we got going. So I'm going to.
Is there anyone in the cast that you would call them by their character name?
I would call Ethan Phillips. I'd always call him the Neelix.
The Neelix. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, the Neelix. And I'd ask him. Yeah, I'd talk to him. But that was just funny. I wouldn't really mean it. All right. I know he's actually a Talaxian. Yes.
I would always forget Tim Russ's real name.
What? Did you?
I don't know why. He's the only person. Like, I knew your name was Robbie. I knew Bob Picardo was Bob. I knew Beltran was Robert. But with Tim, many times I would forget. And I'd go, hey, Tuvok, come over here. I would call him by his character name on the set because I didn't remember it. I had some weird, I don't know what it is.
Well, Tuvok and Tim are sort of the similar, like this show that I'm producing now. I produced this show called Resident Alien. We just finished. I think I mentioned that. But one of the actresses, her real name in real life is Liz Bowen, who I love, Liz. I love her. We go out to, you know, Rebecca and Liz and her boyfriend Tim and I, we all go out to drinks and meals and fun stuff. So I know Liz really well. Her character name is Liv with a V.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm constantly going, Liv, like it starts to come out as Liz, but it turns into Liv or vice versa. So it's just too close. And Tim and Tuvok are a little like a Tim, maybe there's that.
Maybe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I have two parts to my theme. So for the first, my first part was the trust your gut over your better judgment. My second part is do not allow affairs of the heart to cloud your judgment, letting your emotions get the best of you. Cause that's what sent Chakotay on that solo mission. Cause he was embarrassed because his ex girlfriend was doing all this crazy stuff, you know, causing chaos. And therefore,
by the way, they had more than an affair of the heart because they had
a relationship. They knew each other. Yes, they knew each other.
They had tried it, but decided not to keep it going. Like they had been dating. They had been a couple. They had done whatever couples do, all the things that couples do.
Yes. But, so does that mean that she had all of her, everything of her genetics altered to be human?
I would think
you know where
so.
I'm getting it.
I know exactly.
You know where I'm getting all you know where I'm coming.
You would
from,
have
right?
to alter all of it. Yes.
Yeah.
Or he would have known.
He would have known the first time, right?
Yeah. My theme is kind of similar to yours. My theme I wrote down that your past can help you, but it can also hurt you. And to know that it's got an upside and a downside. So similar to your, you know, affairs of the heart cloud your judgment. Like your past is going to give you lessons, good lessons that you can learn. And that's what all the characters did. You know, B'Elanna did from her past, used the warp speed transport idea. Seska used her experience in the past. Chakotay used his. But it can also hurt you. So, yeah.
So similar.
Yeah.
Similar, right?
Good and bad lessons from your past. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, that was fun. I really loved that episode.
For real?
I did. I did. I really did. I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was well directed. I thought the acting was good. It's just the very end that I had a problem with. Like, why didn't you get Seska and the quantum awesome resolator or whatever it's called? It's not a resolator. I think I took resonance oscillator.
What? You say quantum resonator.
It's a resonator.
Isn't it quantum resonance oscillator?
Oscillator. Yeah, but yeah. I you know,
you just mix it all up. I do. Just call it a quesillator.
Oh boy. All right. Well, that was like I said, except for that big hole at the end, everything about this episode, everything else I really loved. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, thanks guys for tuning into our recap of Maneuvers.
What's next week?
Oh, next week is Resistance.
Resistance.
I like that name.
I do too. And I think I immediately, you said Resistance, I immediately went, oh, I think I remember a couple things. So we'll talk about that next week.
Okay, we'll talk about that next week.
Yes, we will.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. And for our patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Thanks, guys.